Go ahead.
Okay, so no introductions. Okay, this is distributing Rust in RPMs for fun, relatively speaking, and profit. I'm Fabio. My nickname basically everywhere is Decathorpe, so if you want to find me online, that's what you need to search for. Short introduction for myself. I've been a Fedora packager since 2016, submitted my first Rust package to Fedora in 2020, and became the primary maintainer of the tools we use for Rust packaging in like about 2022. Been a packaging committee member since 2018, and engineering steering committee member since 2019. I think I'm going to look at my screen because that one isn't flickering. Okay, so what's this talk about? Basically, kind of answering the question that's been floating around in this space for a while now is basically, are traditional package managers becoming obsolete? And I think I'm going to give a short answer to that at the end of the talk. So for a quick background, for people who don't know Rust, which shouldn't be that many by now, it's a compiled language based on LLVM. Typically, everything is statically linked because there's no stable ABI, which may be coming in the future, but not yet. And there's heavy usage of features like compile time code generation, meta programming with macros or build scripts, and stuff like conditional compilation. You also have an official package manager and build system and official package registry, which is cargo and crates.io. Which means one of the benefits of using Rust is that package management and dependency management is really easy, but it also makes it really easy to add lots of dependencies to your projects. And on the Fedora side, we have basically a hard requirement to build everything from source. We have a hard requirement for compliance with license terms, of course. There is a strong preference not to bundle or vendor dependencies. We have a preference for running test suites, if that's possible. And of course, there are like incentives to provide good system integration, which, for example, for command line applications, that's like providing shell completions and manual pages and stuff like that. The approach we use for libraries is that we create packages for Rust crates that only contain the crate sources and no compiled artifacts. Again, because no stable ABI. And even if it had a stable ABI, shipping the compiled artifacts wouldn't really be feasible because you have a lot of combinations for all the feature flags you can enable for those crates. And you basically get a combinatorial explosion. For like a package that has 10 feature flags, you'd need to ship 2 to the 10, which is 1,024 different compiled artifacts, which just blows up and not really possible. And basically the philosophy we have for packaging Rust applications is to make installing it from the package manager provide something that's as close to installing it from the cargo registry, basically as close to possible to that, or if it can, provide something better. So what are the things that we can do better than that? Let's take a... Oh my, that's really distracting. I hope it's not the cable. Okay, how does application installation work when you use cargo? Cargo only supports installing applications by compiling them from source. So it requires users to have a local Rust toolchain installed, which is like cargo, Rust C, and LLVM, which is quite a lot of stuff. If your application has any external dependencies from like C libraries, you also need to install those. And at the end of that chain, cargo install also only supports installing executables into your own user's path. So it only installs executables, it only installs them for the local user, it cannot handle any other files except those executables. So basically, in the Rust ecosystem, some kind of workarounds for those limitations have been developed over time. Some of them are usually considered bad practice, like limitations of cargo build that incentivize bundling C libraries or statically linking those C libraries, and some crates even ship pre-built object files, which is like, don't, please don't. Because doing that means you don't have your users install those libraries at the system-wide level. Like, if you can bundle like a static, you can bundle SQLite sources, then you don't need this SQLite development headers available on the host system. And like, because cargo install only installs executables, that kind of made projects adopt the self-contained executable approach. Basically bundling all the data files and stuff they need into the executable itself, because there's not really a good support for loading them from disk, because you can't install them to disk with the default installation mechanism. On the other hand, installing applications with RPM looks quite different. Everything is integrated with the system package manager. The packages are, when you get them from a system like Fedora, they're built in a trusted environment. They're cryptographically signed. When you install them, you don't need a Rust toolchain or any development headers available on your local system. And the packages can actually ship support files for good system integration. As I said, just as an example, for command line application, it's usually preferable for users to have shell completions, manual pages, config files, data files, whatever you need for the application to work correctly. And actually, you also get like a smaller footprint for the built application, both at in memory and on disk, because stuff like dynamically linked C and C++ libraries, for example, SQLite, is deduplicated both on disk and in memory, and it also disentangles the update cycles between like those libraries and the application. So for example, if there's a security vulnerability in SQLite, you don't need to update the bundle SQLite in every Rust application that includes it, but you can just wait for the system copy to be updated, and you don't need to do anything for the Rust application. Okay, so you install the application. Now you want to update it. How does that work with cargo? Short answer is, it doesn't. It always requires user interaction, so basically running cargo install again for all applications you have on your system. There's no mechanism to notify users of available updates, no mechanism to push security updates, and sometimes rerunning cargo install isn't even enough. Because by default, it does nothing if the application version hasn't changed. So if you want to pull in like a security fix from one of your application's transitive library dependencies, you need to force it to re-download all the library dependencies and compile the application again, even though the application version itself hasn't changed. And that's assuming that the security fix is published in a library version that's compatible with the dependency specifications in that dependency tree. So if that's a SEMVA-breaking version, then even passing the force flag to cargo install won't help you. On the other hand, package updates in RPM, again, integrated with System Package Manager, supports notifying users of available updates and security updates. And in some cases, there's even automatic installation of critical updates. For example, on servers, which use systems like DNF Automatic, or on image-based systems, which also have started to apply system updates automatically. And that also decouples application and library dependency update cycles, mostly. Bonus points for using installing Rust applications from RPM packages: we actually provide much better test coverage for those applications and for libraries. And the package builds run their test suites in an environment that actually matches the environment that the users are going to install those applications in. So test suite is run on Linux. It's run on the same Fedora version that the package is going to be installed on. It's going to run the tests against the same library versions and against this, on the same CPU architecture that you're going to install the package on. And by doing that, we can also add test coverage for environments that are usually not available, like in CI environments, like PowerPC or SystemC. And in Fedora, we also have a kind of package CI, which continuously rebuilds packages against new versions of their dependencies. And that way, we can actually catch regressions quite quickly, usually. Okay. So you might ask yourself, how does this work with packages that use vendor dependencies? Because the default approach is to not do that. But how does it work if you do? I mean, the pro basically for vendoring dependencies is that you can quickly get to a building and working package, and because you can mostly avoid dealing with dependencies. And on the negative side, it's often quite difficult to actually get from a working package to a package that would be acceptable for inclusion in the package repositories, because you cannot actually avoid dealing with those dependencies. You can just put them in a box and say, I don't want to deal with this. It would be nice if you could do that, but yeah. So some of the problems that happen in this case is that you can't take it as a shortcut for avoiding your responsibilities. Like, you need to check, are all the project licenses declared correctly and completely? You need to check, do all the projects contain the mandatory license texts for licenses that require license texts to be included? Are all the licenses acceptable? Not all licenses are acceptable for inclusion in Fedora. Are all projects legally acceptable? Like, is it covered by patents? Is it some kind of media codec that can be added to the Fedora repositories? That's all things that you still need to check. And like, due to limitations of how Cargo vendors dependencies, it's also not actually possible to run tests for your library dependencies. So you can only run the tests off your actual top-level application, but that doesn't cover tests in library dependencies. So how do we do things the hard way, which is, as far as I know, mostly Fedora and Debian, and I think Magia also does it this way to some degree, which is basically create one RPM package per Rust crate, and they, as mentioned previously, only contain the source code and some metadata. But by doing that, you actually share responsibilities between application maintainers, because by now there's quite a large overlap between the dependency trees of most applications. I mean, the Rust ecosystem has mostly stabilized on some popular libraries, and most projects use those. So for that stuff, you can just rely on sharing those responsibilities with other people. You avoid duplicated audit effort, both for legal issues and technical issues, and you can actually quite easily run the test suites for those libraries and often find bugs, especially related to less popular CPU architectures, like Big Endian stuff, which is always funny. We also tend to find LLVM bugs quite frequently. So those are always fun. We also don't get into dependency hell by doing this, because it's actually quite easy to provide parallel installable library versions. Cargo namespaces dependencies both by name and version, so there's no conflicts involved. And one of the benefits of doing it this way is that actually looking at the libraries, fixing issues we find, submitting those changes to upstream projects. Over time, we hope that this improves the ecosystem for all users of those crates, not only for our downstream packages. So eventually those fixes will roll out to everyone, basically. Okay, how do we make doing the quote-unquote right stuff as easy as possible? Substantial work has been put into improving the Rust packaging tooling that we have in Fedora, like Rust to RPM and all the tools around that. By now, I think we've mostly eliminated all the busy work from the packaging workflows. And I don't think there's any language ecosystem that has tooling that is this polished in Fedora, which is kind of busting the myth that Rust packaging is hard, I hope. But if you've not looked at Rust packaging recently, then I recommend you to take a look again, because things are really nice now. There are more improvements coming in the future. Some features that we have already developed can't really be enabled by default yet, because some of the targets we support ship RPM versions that are too old, like RHEL 9 ships RPM 4.14 and RHEL 10 ships RPM 4.19, which are a bit old at this point. But we are still supporting those for building for Apple, so extra packages for Enterprise Linux. Two examples of recent improvements that we've made are like dynamically generated sub-packages that dramatically reduces the boilerplate that you have in RPM spec files for Rust packages. It mostly makes it unnecessary to rerun Rust to RPM for crate updates or metadata changes, but it requires RPM 4.19, so that's not available on RHEL 10. Then there's support for fully declarative build system for Rust crates for common cases. That feature was added to RPM in RPM 4.20, so that's only available on Fedora, not even in Apple 10. Okay, so can we answer this question now? I mean, at least in my opinion, based on the missing features that are in new kinds of package managers, I don't think they can replace traditional package managers quite yet, especially because of missing support for like pushing security updates, which is kind of a critical feature in my mind. Okay, so I think we actually have quite a bit of time for questions. Yeah?
How do you do this for projects like Firefox, where you don't even have crates really in the same sense? You just copy and paste into the source.
There are packages that are like a bit special. Firefox is one of them. I think the published sources, the sources they publish for Firefox actually contain all the things that you need to build Firefox, so they use a different process.
Okay, so for those, you just skip it
on those packages are maintained in a different way. So they don't use the same tools. Yeah.
So you mentioned that the maintenance workload of the dependencies is shared by its users, I mean by the packages that need it. Do you think that this actually happened, or the maintenance is actually be taken more by the first person that needs the dependency until they don't need it anymore, and then you need to find another one?
So the question was that, does sharing the responsibility for package maintenance actually work, or is it just shoved onto one person? Usually that works, yeah. So especially if you have like, hey, my application requires a library update for this library, and for that we need to like push changes to five other packages that depend on this. And usually that's the way things are shared between those application maintainers by needs coming from different sides, if that makes sense. Yeah?
Can you provide more details on the state of CentOS 9 and CentOS 10 support X packages? What is provided by the last packaging and whatnot?
The question was what the tooling support is missing for Apple 10 and Apple 10, Apple 10 and Apple 9. Yeah. The only features that are not supported on those targets are the dynamically generated sub-packages and the declarative build system. The packages themselves are identical between Fedora and Apple.
I'm curious, how do you know when there's a security problem in those places?
The question was, how do we determine if there are security issues, or how do we determine what packages are affected?
Yes.
Yeah. There's a database of security issues in Rust crates. There's a website called RustSec, and it's basically the standard way to track vulnerabilities across the Rust ecosystem. And we are keeping track of those. There's also CVE bugs filed against Rust libraries sometimes, though happily not that frequently. And yeah, we have, I mean, the mapping from crate name to package name is easy because that's just a one-to-one mapping. And even for packages that use vendor dependencies, they have mandatory metadata, so you can map. You can query the package repositories for which package bundles this crate. And so you can compile a list of affected packages and then apply the fixes, rebuild them with the fixed versions. Yeah?
How do you handle dependencies that are very happy to break semantic version?
Okay, the question is how we handle dependencies that publish frequent major versions. Yeah.
That's a good rephrasing.
Yeah.
Especially like 0. Something.
Yeah, we usually don't like them. yeah, it causes more work than if they don't publish breaking versions, of course. I mean, as I said, it's possible to just ship multiple versions of the same crate. I mean, I think the one where we ship the most different versions is the Nix crate, if you know that one, which has like 0.23, 0.24, 0.25, up to 0.31 by now. We're trying to reduce the number of different versions that we ship just because old versions kind of tend to go stale and accumulate bugs, especially like with, I mean, for example, old versions of the Nix crate are now kind of incompatible with glibc 2.43. So I've been trying to get rid of some of those old versions. But yeah, we can. The two approaches you can take is just try to patch everything to the new version and submit those changes to the upstream projects, so those eventually end up in new releases. Or you can package both versions in parallel, at least for a limited amount of time.
But you also try to go upstream, that's nice.
Yeah.
Have you encountered support for your ideas or resistance from the community? How can you ask this in neutral way?
Yeah. The question was if there's been resistance to our efforts within the Rust community.
Or maybe support.
Or support. Both, I think. I mean, some of the frequent responses we get is, why are you doing it this complicated way? And I mean, I think I provided some amount of reasoning why we do it the way we do it, just because it not doing it this way is kind of irresponsible. On the other hand,
those kind of maintenance are usually, I don't know, short sighted.
Yes.
And it's like JavaScript developers or not.
What about reducing the number of packages and the combinatorial explosion? Sometimes there are features that just add stuff, but they don't, like, ideally nothing breaks if you add a feature, but sometimes you can really be sure that you are just adding stuff. Do you use that to reduce the packages and add more features than what was actually used upstream, or?
Okay, just answer the last question, because time is up now. I think, the question was how do we reduce the number of packages that we ship, because some combinations of feature flags are not compatible with each other. Yes, I mean, feature flags are supposed to be additive, but that's not always the case. Like, for example, you have a package that supports two different backends, and you choose one of them, so enabling both is really kind of defeats the point. Mapping both features from cargo metadata to RPM package metadata is still necessary because different applications might use different feature flags. But again, enabling both of them doesn't really make sense, but they both need to still be present.
Are you basically developing RPM with feature flags?
I think the time is over. Oh, yeah. You can ask me afterwards. Mm-hmm.